Hi, my name is Lori. I'm 45 and I'm calling in from Portland, Oregon. I am in perimenopause and I just wanted to vent about the weight gain that is happening. It does not matter what I do. I've tried so many diets out there. I just can't seem to keep the pounds off. And the process is so slow and it's not like before. The pounds just come back with a vengeance.
Welcome to our Perimenopause What the F podcast, brought to you by the Peri community. In this podcast, we talk everything, and we mean everything, perimenopause. We navigate through all our what the F perimenopause moments and all, is this normal, questions. We talked with perimenopause experts, thought leaders, and inspirational voices of the community. To connect with other perimenopause warriors, download our free Peri app. You can find the link in our show notes. And now let's dive right in.
How are you?
Doing okay. So we've got Mary Claire Haver of the Galveston Diet. I'm so excited to speak with you. I know all of our listeners and Peri community will be thrilled to connect with you. So I have been following you for a long time. And I actually, the thing that sort of stopped me from scrolling when I first found you was that you talk about anti-inflammation. And that sort of rings very true for me, which I'll talk about in a little bit. But just to introduce you, you are an OBGYN in Galveston, Texas, I'm assuming. Yes, you live in Galveston. Yes. And you have a practice, or you're part of a practice. And I'm recalling, if I hope correctly, that you were seeing patients who were sort of complaining about feeling perimenopausal, maybe not knowing that that was what was happening. And I think specifically kind of having concerns about weight. And so this is the other thing I just love about you so much, is that your initial response to them was sort of like, I think a lot of physicians that, you know, cut the calories, move more, blah, blah, blah. And then you started to experience it. Is that really kind of it?
That's correct.
Yeah, if you would just kind of share with us your journey a little bit. I don't find that you talk about yourself personally that much on your feed. So I want to take advantage of your time. Have you tell us everything.
Sure. Gosh, that's great to hear, because I feel like all I do is talk about myself, which my husband reminds me not to do.
No, not at all.
The power of the conversation. So I, you know, let me move back about 10 years ago. So I would have been 43, because I'll be 53 in a couple of weeks. And, you know, rocking and rolling, very busy, very well known, very, very sought after practitioner. I was booked. I, you know, was really burning the candle at all ends with calls, surgery, babies, you know. And as I was aging with my patients and was hearing this ever increasing complaint of weight gain with age. And I was starting to feel it a little bit, but I still pretty much had it under control at 43. And I was only taught in medical school and in my training in residency, work out more, eat less, the calories in, calories out. Yeah. And, you know, for most of us, that kind of works when we're younger, for a lot of people. And I had managed to keep my weight in check. You know, I really didn't weigh myself that much at the time, and able to keep on my, you know, scrubs, which is what I wore every day. And then I had a couple of things happen simultaneously to me that really kind of changed my mindset around this. So I come from a very large family. I'm one of eight children. I lost a brother when I was 9 years old to leukemia. And then my next oldest brother, the second in line, I'm fifth in line, was one of my best friends, and he had HIV and hepatitis and was getting very, very ill. And so having to kind of love him through his poor choices and watch him die was horrible for me.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I've got teenagers, you know, preteens, marriage, practice, you're trying to do all the things I was doing, which were maxing out everything and then take care of him was more than I can handle. Mm-hmm. So, and he died kind of suddenly, like we thought we had more time, and he kind of had a stroke and died. And so that was tough because I didn't feel like I had closure. There was a lot of emotional components. Sure. So to drown my grief, I turned to wine and carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. And I would get home from work. I would cry all the way home. That was my private time. I had about a 45-minute commute home. And I would walk straight to the pantry, open it up, and I'd grab the giant thing of Goldfish, which were my children's snacks, my kids in quotes. And I would just eat them by the handful until I felt like it was filling a hole. You know, I was just placating my grief. And then I'd, you know, have wine with dinner and then another glass, you know, maybe a third while we were settling down for the evening, just to kind of numb the pain. And so at the end of that process, about 6 months of that, the grief started to lift. I started kind of coming back to my emotional well-being. However, the wine and excessive carbohydrates had done their toll on the rest of me. And I was about 15, 20 pounds heavier than my happy weight. So I said, okay, I could hear my brother's voice, and he was a character, and, you know, in my head saying, sister, you cannot blame you being fat on me anymore. It's time to get up and go to the gym. And go be fabulous and stop feeling sorry for yourself. Like he talked, that was our dialogue. So I got myself to the gym and started counting calories, and you know, a pound or two would come off, but then it would come right back on. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. I'm only, you know, let me cut the calories a little more. Let me double down at the gym. And it became an obsession. I was working out sometimes twice a day. I'd get up in the middle of the night to empty my bladder and weigh myself. You know, the tone of my day was set by the scale. If it was a good number, if I'd lost a little, I would be happy that day. If it wasn't, I would beat myself up, be obsessed with what I was eating, and restrict more and more and more. So what I didn't realize I was doing, what so many women do who fall into the trap of pure caloric restriction, is I wasn't paying any attention to nutrition. I was losing as much muscle as I was fat. And then when I gained the weight back, it was all fat coming back on. Muscle doesn't come back on without protein and resistance training. I was not paying attention to either. And so I just kept, you know, I was changing my body composition to be more fat, less muscle, which was lowering my basal metabolic rate. And I ended up in this trap that so many women in midlife, on top of that, I'm menopausal, I'm hot flashing, I'm not sleeping, I know my cortisol levels are high, I've just been through a big grief and depression. I, you know, like everything in my environment was working against my better health.
Yes.
So it kind of took, you know, months of trying everything to lose weight that I'd been taught. And then really like my husband saying, you got to stop this. Like you're obsessed. You're not enjoying family dinners. You're missing out on social events. You're not yourself. And so he left for a trip. And I remember saying, when you get back, you're going to have the wife you deserve. I'm going to get this weight off. I mean, crazy talks, negative self-talk. And he's like, honey, I love you. I don't care what you look like, but I want you to be happy. And you're not happy. So that kind of was a wake up call for me.
Yeah.
So I immediately, being the scientist that I am, was like, okay, you can't keep doing the same thing and expect different results. So you got to figure this out. So I just, I worked at a large university at the time, and I contacted the like PhD nutrition department, started talking to them about menopause and age. And they said, you know, we're not really directing a lot of studies at your age. We're doing elderly, we're doing, you know, infants. We do some astronaut, we live very close to NASA, and we do some astronaut nutrition stuff, but here's some articles to get you started. And I just went down rabbit hole after rabbit hole after rabbit hole, learning about anti-inflammation, aging, how aging affects inflammation, how inflammation affects aging, where hormones for women play a part of this, and realized that without some significant changes in my nutrition, I was just going to continue down the same path.
Right.
And I also got really excited about Dr. Mark Mattson's research on intermittent fasting and neurodegenerative disease and how it's such a powerful anti-inflammatory lifestyle change. And I just thought of it that way. And so I said, okay, so I'm making all these notes. I have my little notebook. It's just for me. It's totally
science.
I had done it for the world, but I just wanted to get rid of the inner tube around my waist.
Yeah.
So the belly fat was killing me. So I was like, okay. So I just started practicing on myself, experimenting, and it worked.
Yeah.
So then my pain start noticing, you know, because I live in a small town. I've grown mm-hmm. these women, and I've been taking care of these women for 20 years, you know. So my girlfriend, so they want to start doing it. So I'm making little copies at the Office Depot two blocks from here, handing it out to whoever wanted it. And then I started sharing it on social media. I had a small Facebook group and following, whatever. And so who wants to try this? Me. So then it kind of exploded. Mm. And I didn't realize what I was doing, but it was a testing ground. And so I ended up in small private Facebook groups, and I put about 100 to 150 women in the groups, and I would just teach them the program. It was becoming a program. They would give me feedback. I need you to explain this more, make another video on this, you know, take this away. This is too complicated, you know, break this down more. And so that year and a half of experimenting and giving it away for free, I didn't realize what I was doing, but I was developing a program that would actually work as far as how to educate an adult woman. And I ended up running about 1,500 people through the program. Mm-hmm. And then finally I had some entrepreneur friends who were like, listen, if you don't take this seriously and create, you know, get this copyrighted and everything, someone's going to steal it from you. You're being smart about this. So I made a tough decision to see if I could make this a business, mm-hmm. you know, and I basically had to resign from my job. I was really reaching critical burnout level, as many physicians do, you know, at my age. I wasn't building anything, you know, like for OB-GYN, it's fee for service. So if I want to make more money, I have to see more patients. And I was exhausted. Mm-hmm. And I was like, trained hundreds of residents to do what I do. You know, I've taken care of thousands of patients. I've delivered thousands of babies. I've done hundreds of surgeries, you know, if not thousands. And I feel like my passion is here. You know, mm-hmm. I feel like I can make a bigger impact to the world teaching women about nutrition mm-hmm. and aging. And so I gave myself 3 months. I retired basically after 20 years from my job. And I got a part-time hospitalist position because I didn't want to quit completely. Mm-hmm. And I focused on how to make the Galveston diet a business. Mm-hmm. And so I tried an ebook that was a disaster. So someone suggested, hey, try an online course. And I was like, what's that? So I took a course on how to do an online course and picked a platform and just went for it. And that's kind of been the magic for us. So that was August of 2018. And since we launched as a business, we have enrolled 63,000+ students.
Wow. That's amazing.
Now, I mean, it's pretty much 90% of what I do is this.
You are gifting so many women with knowledge. I just want to circle back for a second, because this is something that I notice comes through in your work as well. That this relationship that you had with sort of poor quality foods, or the alcohol, the carbohydrates, call it what you will, but sort of not making the best nutritional decisions for yourself, really came out of a place of grief. And I find that, just first of all, thank you for sharing that. I know that I have heard you talk about your brother, one of your brothers. I didn't know that you had lost two. I don't think I realized sort of how the food stuff or your relationship with food kind of was dictated by your grief. And I notice in your work, you have this component that's about mental health and wellness and sort of addressing that, meditation and all these sorts of things. And the piece that you're talking about, I guess what I'm saying, is almost like a bigger piece, you know, I think for so many women, and for so many women in midlife, you know, who may have suffered losses or divorce or kids leaving or whatever it is, kind of redefining ourselves and turning to food. So automatically, did that right away enter into your program, the mental health part, the self-care part?
It grew over time. You know, first I was just focused on losing the weight.
Right.
Then I realized the non-scale benefits, the health, the sleep, the, you know, and getting my menopause under control, you know, like on that. So then I'm doing great from a business standpoint, and I'm doing great from a weight and kind of health standpoint. But then I realized that kind of opened up space for me to realize that I had some serious mental health issues I needed to address. Things mm-hmm. that happened to me in my past, as we all do, you know, relationship, my mom, my kids, brother. And so I hired a coach to help me work on that aspect. And she taught me about meditation and journaling. And I thought, this is so powerful. I've always just kind of blew it off as woo woo. And, you know, I'm stronger than this. I don't need all that. And boy, did I ever need it. And so Jess Marotti, then she got involved with Galveston Diet, and she kind of put together some materials for our students. So that kind of grew from that. But now, as for Galveston Diet, like if you join today, it's just immediately there as part of, for so many of us, we turn to food. Our food has always been a solace or whatever. And so in our community, we have a large Facebook community, well, 2,000 people who are like in our VIP program. Right. And we talk about this every single day. And, you know, victories, triumphs. And so I lost Bob in 2015. My brother Jude died last year, and my dad died in May. And so those two, and I took care of both of them at the bedside till I was there at their deaths. You know, I did all the home care for both of them. And I just was in such a better place. Yes, the deaths were hard. Yes, I grieved. Yes, it opened up more stuff. But I knew going in, I'm in a better place emotionally, mentally, health-wise, to help me get through this. You can't take away the deaths. They're going to happen.
Sure.
But how I responded to it and what I used to help me get through it emotionally, stop becoming food and alcohol. Well, food for sure. Probably with Jude, alcohol needed some work. But then for my dad, I got control. So yeah, we talk about it all the time, and it is a part of the Galveston Diet now.
So now I just want to circle back to where I started about the anti-inflammatory component. So the reason it struck me so much, years ago, I worked with a functional medicine practitioner who had a practice and worked with chronic pain patients, and I administered a treatment for them. And over time and over the course of several treatments, kind of came to the conclusion that they all suffered from really high inflammation, and that many of us are walking around suffering, whether we have chronic pain or not. So when I saw that part, you know, that loud voice coming out of your feed, I was really excited, because I feel like if more people sort of focused on that and less so the weight loss kind of becomes the icing on the cake if you want it. But the bigger part is the health. So could you talk about that, some, the anti-inflammatory piece?
So one of the mantras that I have in the Galveston Diet is, we are here for your long-term health. If you're looking for a quick weight loss program, you need to move on. We're not the place for you. And we are not weight loss at any cost. I'm not going to sacrifice inflammation, your long-term health, you know, your blood sugar, anything in order for you, your cholesterol, anything in order for you to lose weight. That would be unethical of me. And that's where the anti-inflammatory piece comes in. I say, we're really a long-term health program with weight loss as a pleasant side effect.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Fat loss, you know, because you can lose a ton of weight and lose muscle. And you're going to be worse off than when you started.
Right.
And so, and getting people to like open their minds to that and not be self-obsessed with the scale, because you know what? Tomorrow I can make you gain 5 pounds.
Right. Especially in midlife. Right.
It's just so anti-inflammatory nutrition. So there's several components to it. When you know, aging causes inflammation. We cannot undo the fact that we're aging. That is normal and natural. As we lose estrogen through perimenopause, as our estrogen levels start, you know, wildly fluctuating, but on a downward trend, estrogen is a powerful anti-inflammatory chemical, you know, hormone, and inflammation levels go up. Cholesterol, you know, your triglycerides go up, your LDL goes up, your insulin resistance goes up, leptin resistance goes up. It is a very rough feedback cycle that you have to take the reins.
So estrogen's declining, fluctuating and declining. And as that's happening, inflammation is going up, LDL numbers are going up, triglycerides are going up, blood sugar, your insulin
tends to go
it's
up.
It's all going up.
Tend to trend up. Your insulin levels, your fasting insulin levels tend to trend up. Insulin resistance goes up, leptin resistance goes up. And so everything in your environment, which you were kind of able to manage, and so everything in your internal environment starts making it harder. And I don't want to say working against you. It's just the aging process. Now, everything in our environment is working against us as well. Food companies and the way they market, accessibility to healthy foods, the media pushing supplements, pushing, not that all supplements are bad, you know, like no one's talking about nutrition because it's not making anybody any money.
Right.
And so, you know, the best way to start getting out of that loop and reversing the cycle is to get a hold of your nutrition and start controlling inflammation with food. Food is medicine. And so many of our students have said, guess what? I've been able to cut back on this, cut back on that. I can't guarantee that it's going to cure your autoimmune disease or anything like that. We are showing that people are able to improve multiple disease states with simple nutritional changes.
I say this periodically, and I'll tell you this right now. I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. I'm not selling anything to anybody. I would never in a million years, but in changing my approach to nutrition, I tamped everything way down. So I would never tell anybody what to do, but I truly believe in the power of food. And I, you know, of course, that's why I was so excited to have you speak with us.
Well, it's funny you say that because arthritis.org is all about nutrition. They go on and I even quote them and have one of their articles in the program as like something you need to read. So arthritis.org is one of the first organizations I've found that just preaches from the rooftops.
Interesting.
Nutrition treatment for arthritis, both rheumatoid and osteo.
Okay. I have the chills. I feel very vindicated. I know that it's true, but I can only speak for myself. So thank you for that. So did you in sort of focusing on an anti-inflammatory protocol, did that come out of just sort of what you knew? Because this is the other thing. I said this before. This is the other thing that I so appreciate about you is you talk about what you did and did not learn in medical school. So I'm super curious when you sort of faced an anti-inflammatory protocol as a pathway to health, particularly for menopausal women and perimenopausal women. Was that something that came out of your own research with regards to yourself, or did you sort of go back to what you had or hadn't learned? Tell us about that.
Med school, we learned what a carbohydrate was, what a protein was, what a fat was, and how many calories were in each. We learned the Krebs cycle, like how a sugar is broken down into water and carbon dioxide. We learned, you know, biomechanics. We learned about severe nutritional deficiencies like kwashiorkor or scurvy or those kind of things, you know, complete lack of nutrients we learned about. But as far as like the complex interplay between different nutrients, yeah, we learned about TPN, total parental nutrition, where people have to get their food in a bag, you know, but as far as regular Joe nutrition, it was almost like porn. You know it when you see it without any education.
Right.
So, which is, it just opens the door to so much disordered eating, to so many people, just misconceptions. And I went back to school as a doctor and got certified in culinary medicine from Tulane University, from the Gold Ring Center for Culinary Medicine, because I was just searching for more, you know, I was tired of doing it on my own. I wanted somebody to help. Yeah. So I found a program for doctors, PAs, nurse practitioners, dietitians. And you have to have like an advanced degree in order to take this course.
Okay.
That's nutrition and medicine meet, you know?
Right. And I bet that was incredibly eye-opening for you.
Mind blowing.
What was something that stood out to you? I can't even imagine. There must have been a million things.
7 out of 10 chronic diseases are nutrition related.
That's huge.
You know, we know that obesity rates are rising dramatically in the United States. We know that, but it really helped you understand why. And not just, you know, it took the onus out of it being the patient's fault. You know, at that point, I'm still a practitioner. I don't call my students patients because I don't have a doctor-patient relationship with them. But you know, it helped me realize the environment and what portion that plays, how everything, food deserts, choices, culture, yeah, works together. And so it's helping a patient, like if I'm still in clinical practice, break that down step by step, because there's just so many factors. I can't tell you how many questions I get. Just give me one thing. I just want to take one pill. What's the magic? And I'm like, I'm sorry. This is a lifetime journey. I wish I had one thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're going to help break this down, and your journey is not the same as her journey and his journey and their journey. You know, it's all very individual, and there are multiple factors that play into this, but we're going to help you break it down one by one.
Awesome. Okay. Now, another specific, and you mentioned this already, but tell us, midlife women, about why the principle of calories in, calories out is not where it's at if you're trying to lose weight.
One of the biggest problems with calories in, calories out is that if you Googled it and you said, what is my basal metabolic rate? And you just Google BMR, okay? Because that's the calories out component, right?
Okay.
It's your height, your weight, and your age. It doesn't say if you're a man. It doesn't. Oh, some of the calculators will ask for male or female. But if you're going to a 25, well, I'm being very sexist and ageist here. If you're going to a 25-year-old male trainer at the gym and you're a 50-year-old woman, he's going to pull out his little sheet, which is what he was taught. He's just doing what he's told, and give you your calories out as well. It does not take into account menopause,
right,
perimenopause, medications, chronic illness, disease, how you feel that day. You know, and it puts all of the onus on you and willpower, which is only a fraction. There are people, I can't tell you how I see so many comments, and it just makes me sick to my stomach. People are fat because they're lazy. People are fat because they don't care. People are fat because they refuse to make the right choices. And I'm like, you really think we are now at the point where 70% of Americans are obese or overweight plus, okay? 70% of us, more than 2 out of 3.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those people don't care. Every right. single one of them has given up. Every
right.
single one of them is just lazy.
Mm-hmm. It's impossible.
It's impossible. But that's where calories in, calories out, you know, fails. It fails to take into account, you know, so many things. And then if you just do calories in, calories out, and you don't pay attention to the quality of your nutrition, leptin and insulin and cortisol and ghrelin, these are the top 4 hormones. There's a few more, but these are the big 4. Cortisol and insulin determine how and where you store fat. Insulin tells your body to store fat, okay? Leptin and ghrelin control your hunger and your satiety. Calories in, calories out do not take that into any account, and nutrition affects those 4 hormones dramatically.
Yeah.
Just counting calories and eating out of a bag of a box and things that are low fat, you are ripping your nutrition opportunity to shreds.
Yeah. Interesting.
Missing the health book to go after simple weight loss. And it's just not that simple.
So you're making me think of another thing that I've heard you speak about, which is a ketogenic diet. And one thing I've observed is that many people sort of understand keto to be everything but the carbs. So I can have, I can't even think of something. Like I can have my chicken like fried, but without the breadcrumbs, but it's still fried in vegetable oil. And I'm going to eat, you know, I don't know, tons of carrots with it, or I'm going to have like a lot of bacon and I'm going to have it with my vegetables. But correct me if I'm wrong, I've heard you say that there's correct keto and then there's incorrect keto, or there's sort of dirty keto and clean keto.
I stopped using keto mentality because it makes people go,
it makes people go crazy.
You will lose weight chasing ketogenesis. Okay. If you're chasing ketones in your urine, you will lose weight, but you will end up nutritionally deficient, constipated, highly inflamed, much less healthy than when you started. And when the weight comes back, it's almost impossible to lose again. It's not sustainable. So in the Galveston diet, we do look at macronutrients. We do give you some limits on macronutrients to accelerate weight loss, which is why people come to the program. They stay not for the weight loss, they stay for the health benefits. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then once you start reaching your goal weight, we take you out of that. Okay.
Right.
And we want something that has been proven clinically for long-term health and to be more sustainable. And some people just jump into the program and go right to what we call our maintenance, you know, mm-hmm. program or mm-hmm. government life. But the way most people do the traditional keto programs is hugely unhealthy, unsustainable. They do lose weight. It's temporary. And, you know, I tell people, if you're looking for a keto program, then you need to find another program.
Because okay. we're going to be. Can you talk about the oils part mm-hmm. and yeah. healthy oils, healthy fats, sure. less quality?
I'll be 53 and I grew up in the era of low fat, low fat, low fat. My mother served us Oleo, which is like the worst thing you can put in your body.
Yes. Butter was. I know it well.
And you know, you learn more, but science gets better and yada, yada, yada. But when I think back to what we were putting powdered milk in an effort to be low fat and, look where it got us. We're heavier and more obese, less healthy than we've ever been. So, but specifically, there are healthy fats and they're like anything in life. There's things that are more nutritious and there's things that are less nutritious. There's things that are pro-inflammatory, things that are neutral, and things that are anti-inflammatory. What's happened in food processing with the modernization of, you know, technology and techniques on how food is created, processed, and stored, we use a lot of vegetable oil. So first, the FDA required the trans fats to be pulled off the market. They're pretty much gone for the most part now because they are kill you. And right. Then companies started using vegetable oils. It's healthy. It's natural. It's da-da-da. But what happens is what people didn't realize, I think, or some of the food scientists probably knew this, but they didn't care, is that there are certain oils that are rich in different omega acids. We have omega-3, omega-6, and omega-9. Omega-9 is kind of neutral. We don't get much of that. It's fine. Omega-3 is powerfully anti-inflammatory. It's a tremendous antioxidant. It's the oils that are found in fatty fish and walnuts and flax seeds and chia seeds, that kind of thing. So good for you, okay? We don't eat a lot of that naturally. You have to kind of think about it and make yourself.
Yeah.
Omega-6, we, you know, as in when we were like cave people, we ate about the same amount of omega-6 to omega-3 daily. In the industrialization and eating out of bags and boxes and things that are processed, we eat about 20 times the amount of omega-6 as we do omega-3. We've lost the balance. And then when you eat that much more omega-6, it becomes inflammatory. So what I was taught in culinary medicine and what I teach our students is that, you know, don't obsess over foods that are naturally rich in omega-6. They're fine because they also have vitamins, mineral, nutrients, fiber, and other things in them that make them healthy. What you're worried about are things that are extracted and then used in the processing, like corn oil.
Yes. Like,
yeah. So corn oil is the biggest. Safflower oil, sunflower seed oil, the way that they're extracted and they're baked into products. So anything in a bag or a box, cookies, crackers, cakes, yep. you know, you know, all are baked with these. They have to have oils to, you know, for the baking process.
Right.
And they're high in omega-6, which ends up being pro-inflammatory.
What's your take on canola oil? Because I've always thought no. And then I've heard other, you know, dietitians say it's okay.
Canola is one of the better ones. I mean, olive oil is super rich in omega-3. It's got good levels of omega-3. It does have omega-6 as well. And so, but canola is not bad. And again, everything in moderation. I wouldn't say drink it by the gallon or take a bath sure. in it, but you know, in moderation, canola can be okay.
Okay. So tell us about intermittent fasting, how you came uh-huh. to it. You love it. What okay. about for people who say, oh, I don't know.
I get so happy.
I know you love it. It's your thing.
It is the one thing that scares people the most.
Oh, really?
The victory when they accomplish it. And it's the easiest thing for them to stick to.
Okay.
And they feel so much better. So I learned about it. You know, I'd heard about it, fasting. It was like in the back, you know, I'd hear about it here and there. I was like, oh, that's a fad. I don't want to not eat. I have to have my breakfast. Mm-hmm. So then I started reading the research and I was like, huh. And I watched what really changed my life and what I recommend. There is a TED Talk by Dr. Mark Mattson. MarkMatson, Mark Matson from the National Institutes of Health. He's retired now, but he's the one who did the groundbreaking research on neurodegenerative disease and utilizing time-restricted feeding in science, that's intermittent fasting, for treatment. And he did a beautiful talk that just blew my mind. So, and his talk was not about weight loss. His talk was about health, and his talk was about inflammation and people, you know, people with family histories of dementia and Alzheimer's disease, and thinking about utilizing this as part of your practice to hopefully potentially avoid the worst of the complications from those diseases, because it's a huge genetic component.
Right.
So I was like, huh, maybe I should look into this. So the advice I got was to take it slow. So I knew the first thing I had to do, first thing I did every morning, was make a cup of coffee, and I would dump Equal and milk into my coffee. And I would travel with it in a Ziploc, because I had to have my coffee the way I wanted my coffee. My husband drank black coffee in my life. So, and I would just be like, ew, you know, occasionally you pick up the wrong cup and I'd be like,
right.
So I was like, how am I going to do this? So the advice I got was start slowly, decreasing the amount of stuff you put in your coffee, whatever it is. So I would have my little Equal thing, and I'd open it up and I'd
just a little bit less,
roll it back down to save it for the next day. And so I'd put the milk in, you know, and then by doing it that way over a couple of weeks, I was able to get to black. The other thing we did was make sure we had really high quality coffee. Putting a pinch of like Himalayan sea salt, or just, you know, a pinch of salt in your coffee grounds can work wonders for the bitterness. I started adding nutmeg to the grounds. I do good flavored coffee, naturally flavored coffee, things with like mocha or cinnamon, or I got just into good coffee, and that really helped me. So I conquered that first. And then right after I had my coffee, I would eat breakfast. And my breakfast was something probably like oatmeal, or, you know, something heavy carb and very little protein. And so I started pushing my breakfast window out by like 30 minutes. So if I'd eat at 6:30, I started at 7, and I would do that for about a week, you know, 4 or 5 days until it felt comfortable, normal, natural. And I wasn't hungry. I wasn't gurgling. And then I'd go another 30 minutes.
Okay.
And I'd do that for a few days until it felt okay. And I just did that process over and over and over again until I got to noon. And I remember I was at the hospital in clinic, sitting at my desk, and I had my lunch. I would pack my lunch. I had my lunch ready, and my watch went ding, and it was noon. And I went, oh, I'm an intermittent faster. I did it. Like, I was running around the clinic, and they're like, and so, and, but it took about 5 weeks.
Okay. So before you focused on what you were breaking your fast with, you focused on the time.
Yeah.
Is that right? So before you
I was paying more attention to being healthy, but I was not like heavy duty, you know, really looking. I was starting to make changes, but I didn't want to overwhelm myself. And that's kind of how I coach our staff.
So for menopausal women, and clarify this for me, if you would, because I've heard varying things, perimenopausal women, or women who are still menstruating, should they just go ahead and try this anyway?
I made this program for us, perimenopause, menopause, but it works for everyone. Go figure.
Yeah.
And as healthy as healthy, but I specifically did it for us. And, but you know, because it was COVID, people were sharing it. They were living in homes with all their cousins and relatives and whatever, you know? And so women are still the gatekeepers of the kitchen for the most part.
Right.
So they were sharing it with their family. And of course their husbands were losing more weight than them.
I know.
The men in their family. So it turns out it works for everyone. And absolutely. So my daughter, who's a nutrition science major with hopes to be a registered dietitian, then go to medical school. She's very ambitious. She made a program for younger people on the principles of Galveston diet. It's called Galveston Prime. So we kind of have options for everyone. And we have tons of students in our program that are octogenarians. I mean, that are like, hey, I'm like, it's never too late.
Tell us, if you would, you started early in our conversation, but what is it about it? What is the science about it that supports a healthy body, weight loss, likely, less risk for neurodegenerative diseases. What is it about intermittent fasting? I think
all three of the components, the fasting, the nutrition, the fuel refocusing, all work synergistically together to decrease inflammation and help you reach those goals.
Okay. So you're a proponent, you love it. We should all try it. Try it maybe like half hour increments. And so tell us also, so is it an 8 hour window, a 6 hour window? What is your eating window goal?
I recommend a 16. So for fasting, which is one of the components, I recommend a 16-8, which means 16 hour continuous fasting, followed by an 8 hour eating window. Now I sleep during my fasting window, which I do recommend. Now I have students who choose to break their fast soon after awakening, and then their fasting window is more in the afternoon and evening, because that just works better for their schedule or whatever, work shift work or whatever. So it's, you know, you have to do what works. The only thing program or lifestyle change that's going to work is the one that's going to work.
Yeah.
And so if you are missing dinner with your family every night, you know, and that's hurting relationships, well, then you should be a morning faster. Most people do fast in the morning so that they can be more social with their family in the evening or whomever. And so, there are a significant amount of people who find it easier for them to fast in the evening because they want their coffee with what they want in the morning.
Right. And as far as exercise, I know there are going to be people out there wondering, well, what about exercise and what do I do? And I'm so hungry and, you know, all this stuff.
Yeah. Again, I'm a morning exercise person, and because I eased into it and I took my time pushing out that window, it was no problem. And so certainly if you are, you know, I do HIIT almost every day. Mm-hmm. So I do some, you know, cardio weightlifting on my exercise days, and I make it to noon, no problem. But I did not wake up in 16-8 overnight. I gave myself time and I kept exercising in the morning. If you give yourself the gift of time and patience, you can absolutely get there.
Yeah. Please. If you hear anything out of this, please know to take your time and take all the time you need. If it's 5 weeks, if it's 8 weeks, I think you would.
One thing I tell our students is that you have the rest of your life to master this. You don't have to stop looking for immediate gratification. It took you years to get where you are today. If you're not happy with it.
That's so true.
And it's going to take some time to undo the damage. So just be patient. Be here in a year.
Yeah.
It's the best advice I've ever gotten. Be here in a year.
I love that. Okay. I'm going to just motor through a few more questions. Food. People want to know what to eat. We've talked about things that we shouldn't be eating. You know, poor quality oils, things in boxes and bags, sodas, you know, refined sugar. What are we eating? And I know everyone's familiar with your program already, but they definitely will go check it out. But what, you know, for someone on the street who's like, well, you know, what should I eat? What are you telling them?
So, you know, of course, in the program, we have meal plans and shopping lists and all the things, but, you know, pretty much things the way that nature intended it to be eaten is a good rule of thumb. So fruits and veggies, you know, with as little processing as possible. I mean, if you want to heat it up or mix it up or whatever, but, you know, and fresh is always best. Frozen is next, you know, canned is third. And again, I understand everybody has different budgets, choices, whatever. That goes for lean meats. If you know, I enjoy meat. I'm not a vegetarian, but we do have vegetarian options. And, you know, as close to nature as intended it for meats, you really want to avoid nitrites. Nitrates, you know, those are carcinogenic and highly inflammatory, and the gut microbiota doesn't like them. Anything artificially colored, any artificial flavors. So as close as you can get it to nature, read the label on everything. Educate yourself. Track what you eat so you know what you're putting in your body and the nutritional components. So fruits, veggies, whole grains, legumes, lean meats, healthy fats.
Okay. By whole grains, you mean what?
100% whole wheat. Yeah. People eat bread. I mean, I have a Dave's Killer Seed Bread in the fridge right now. Now, I don't eat couple sandwiches a day. Today, I have avocado toast. So I, you know, mash up an avocado and put some spices in it. I toasted one slice of bread. I had some nitrite-free bacon available, so I threw that on there. Sometimes I'll scramble an egg and pop it on there with some avocado. I'll throw a little salsa, some seasoning, and I'm good to go. So, okay. You know, my go-to, you know, two go-tos, you know, my top things. One is my parfait. I have that probably a couple times a week to break my fast. And it's plain Greek yogurt. Again, plain, nothing in it, nothing added. You read the label, it says yogurt. That's all.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And I enjoy it because it's fermented, and fermentation adds tons of natural probiotics, which are super healthy for you. It's also a decent source of protein, and I have no lactose intolerance, so I can tolerate it fine. To that, I will add fresh berries for sweetness, for tartness, for the fiber, for the anthocyanins, for the nutrients available in the fruit. I will add nuts for the healthy fats, for the fiber, for again, for the nutrients, for the omega-3s. I'll put a tablespoon of chia seeds and a tablespoon of ground flax. Again, fiber and omega-3s there. And that is a perfect way to break your fast because it's got a good pro, you know, when I talk to people about, you know, each meal, each snack, the best thing to do is make sure you've got a healthy carb, a complex carb, a healthy fat, and a great source of protein all together. Yeah. That's going to make that leptin and ghrelin work in your favor. That's going to control your hunger and your satiety. Okay.
Awesome.
To work for you. Every meal, every snack. My other favorite thing to do is the leftover salad. So I always have some greens in the fridge. I make sure I keep those stocks. So, you know, spinach and kale and different lettuces, whatever. I'll throw some of that in a bowl. I'll usually throw in a legume. So I'll do some okra or red beans or black, whatever beans I have. I'll rinse them off, throw them in there. And then I'll kind of look around and see what I have left over. I'll put olives in there, whatever I had for dinner the night before, chop up some veggies, throw it in there. And I'll put olive oil and lemon juice, salt, pepper, and mix that up. And that's another way I love to break my fast. Everything healthy, everything nutritious, no added sugars. And, you know, full of fiber, full of macronutrients, full of micronutrients.
Just now, does your program focus on portions at all or no? Yeah. Not necessary.
Yeah. I mean, the meal plans are weighed and what.
Sure.
I don't want people to get hung up on portion size and calories. If you're eating enough fiber and enough healthy fat, and your body should be full and tell you.
Yes.
So we talk about cues and intuitive eating and that kind of stuff as well.
Okay. Now, can you tell us about supplements? You said like, you know, you're it's hit or miss with supplements, but what do you recommend that women in midlife be taking?
Okay. So first of all, I do a lot of talks on nutrients women need. And so immediately everyone thinks supplement.
Yeah.
I'm talking about nutrients and food. Okay. Because when you just do a supplement, you're only pulling out what's extracted and you're missing the other gifts that are in the food that was pulled out of.
Right.
So like magnesium you can get from pumpkin seeds, right? It's a great source of magnesium, but pumpkin seeds also have tons of healthy fat and fiber.
Mm-hmm.
And so by taking the magnesium supplement, you are missing the healthy fat and the fibers. You're not going to be full. It's not going to decrease your blood sugar. It's not going to, do you understand what I mean?
Yes, absolutely.
A lot of studies are done because of foods rich in X, not supplements. And so a lot of people think, oh, this was a diet rich in magnesium. This must be supplementable. No, no, no. This was food rich in those things. So that being said, as a nation, we only get about half of the fiber we should every day. Most people only get half.
Wow, that's significant.
So, you know, and then a woman should get minimum 25. I have no problem hitting 25, but I'm a super achiever. I want 35,
right,
which is the upper limit. So I do supplement about 10 grams of fiber per day. I get 25 out of my food first.
Okay.
The other thing is if you look at the American population or North American, we are about 42% of us are deficient in vitamin D for multiple reasons. We don't absorb it well. We're not getting nearly enough in our diet. We're not, you know, to get enough sunshine for your body, you need to have full body sun exposure 20 minutes, three times a week. We're not doing that because wrinkles and skin cancer and, you know, access to sun or living in an area without a lot of sunshine. So, you know, when a woman approaches menopause, that number reaches 85%. So I'm a big proponent of try your best to get vitamin D through nutrition, but go ahead and supplement about 2,000 international units a day.
Okay.
The other is omega-3 fatty acids. We're just not getting enough. Fish is one of the richest sources. Americans just aren't eating enough fish. Access, food, taste, preferential, not growing up with it, you know, the fatty fish. So, you right. know, and fish sticks don't count. So salmon. So if you're eating salmon 3 to 4 times a week, you should be okay with omega-3 fatty acids, but most people are not doing that or have allergies. Don't have access. So I actually created an omega-3 and vitamin D together supplement to help, you know, make sure people are hitting those levels because they're right. so important.
Right. So can you speak a tiny bit on how an anti-inflammatory diet speaks to mental and emotional health?
Mm-hmm. So there's been studies done when they looked at risks of depression, risks of anxiety, risks of mental health. And they looked at what patterns of eating that those people had. It's almost across the board. People who ate diets that were more, you know, higher in natural omega-3s, higher in natural fiber, magnesium and vitamin D, omega-3 are the big three for mental health, that they are much less likely to have depression and anxiety. And ADHD is another huge one. We're finally able to recognize it, diagnosing it. So more older people are getting diagnosed. And so omega-3 is huge for those people. I actually, both my kids have ADHD. And so I have them on omega-3 supplements for that, you know, to help just as part of their treatment.
Do you find that for women in midlife, for perimenopausal, menopausal women, that meditation or what are some of the kind of like mental health mitigation strategies do you encourage for women our age?
I'm not a mental health expert, so let me just you know, and I neglected my own mental health, self-care, you know, whatever that looks like for you. And that's one thing I'm learning from our students is journaling is not going to work for everyone. Meditation is not going to work for everyone. For some people, it's prayer. That is their way. It's some kind of self-reflection, however that looks for you. Meditation works for a lot of people. Journaling works for a lot of people. Prayer is working for a lot of people. For some people, it's a walk, it's exercise, but they are able to clear their mind.
Yeah. Like
whatever activity it's going to be for you, for your schedule, that is going to allow you to have a sense of self, to turn all the noise off and focus. For others, it's listening to music. Mm-hmm. You know, there's mm-hmm. you know, some people are musical and it's a way for them to release, relax, let it go and just let the music take over, you know, be present in the moment.
Okay. I know I don't want to keep you. I just want to ask what is next in store for you? You're really busy and you have a lot of students and you built this phenomenal business and really a gift to so many women and men.
We just kind of overhauled and relaunched our community, and that's called Galveston for Life.
Okay.
So it is it's a private Facebook group. We're going to move it to another platform because Facebook's kind of fallen apart. And we just did in the middle of a 50-day challenge. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw the Galveston.
I did.
So I really inspired by Anthony Frisella's 75 Hard, but it's too hard. So I made one for Galveston dieters. So I'm actually doing the work with them. I'm in it to win it. And, you know, here's my book right here next to me for the challenge. We have guided, you know, we keep track every day of our goals. And so that's been really big. But in the future, we are launching Spanish.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we're launching a Spanish version. We're just about ready to go. And we are moving to a continuous value model. So before, all up into this time, it's like buying a book. You buy the online program, it's there for you. And we've seen such tremendous success in community building in our Galveston for Life group. We're kind of moving to that direction where you get the program where we teach you all the things, but you also get the community aspect where we're not only teaching you how to fish. Like if I just gave you a meal plan and said, go do this, you'd lose weight. That's giving you fish. You know, the educational component is teaching you how to fish. And then the lifetime, you know, aspect is keeping you fishing through community.
Can't people also go to school with you and then become coaches, I guess, if you will, right?
Yeah. So we accidentally developed a coaching program. Yeah. I had to find.
I was thinking about doing it.
I can't do it all on my own. Right. And really, our coaches have self-selected. They basically stood in front of me and were like, hey,
yeah,
I love this. I want you to do this.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay.
So, okay. I know I have to let you go. I don't want to let you go, but I know I have to. Dr. Haver, thank you so much. This has been such a treat. I'm so happy to meet you. And I know that all of us are, people are saying thank you. All of us are so, you know, grateful for your time. Your program really is, it's unique. It's thoughtful. It's simple. It makes a lot of sense. I had a lot of people reach out to me in my DMs when they saw I was going to speak with you and say, you know, they just rave about your program. So you should know again from someone else that you're touching a lot of people in a really positive way. So thank you.
All right, guys.
Thank you so much. All right. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to our Perimenopause What the F podcast. The perimenopause journey can be lonely, and it doesn't have to be that way. Make sure to download our free Peri app to connect with perimenopause warriors in the same stage of life. See you next time, Peri sisters.